sometimes locking out for some exercises is it turns out it's fine. You look at the reasoning for it, and it's like, well, it puts pressure on your tendons, and that's one of the it's one of the myths of the fitness industry.
Yo, gorillas, welcome to the Athlete Insider podcast by Gorilla Nation. My name is Phil, and today's guest is Hampton from Hybrid Calisthenics. I'm super looking forward to this interview. Hampton is somebody who is sharing calisthenics advice to over 2.6 million subscribers on YouTube, 1.6 million on TikTok, crazy numbers already, and nearly 600,000 on Instagram. I'm really looking forward to get to know you better, Hampton, and to present and talk about yourself in this podcast episode. Welcome to the show.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Phil. Same to you. I'm really excited to be here.
Awesome. Thanks again that you take the time. And yeah, I think in our community, we have a few people who won't know your name, who won't know your face. I think maybe your face, everybody saw it once popping up in his YouTube shorts or TikTok or whatever. but right. Yeah, still, do you want to present yourself? Who are you? Who is Hampton?
Sure. You know, and I mean, that's kind of the thing with doing internet content, or even really just doing any kind of content beforehand, there's always more people who will know you than people who will like you, or even like know you well, right? Just like people, that they might approach you on the street and be like, "Hey, I know you. I've seen you before." But those are people who would like you. I always wonder how many people see me. He's like, "Oh yeah, he's that guy." My name is Hampton, and my brand and channel is Hybrid Calisthenics. And I do a lot of home workout stuff, and it's called Hybrid Calisthenics. And I was just talking to Phil beforehand that, while these things refer to the same thing, body weight exercise, we have slightly different communities, actually very different communities. When you say street workout, body weight fitness, home workout, like progressive calisthenics, it's almost like I can name like different groups that belong to those, those categories. My thing was really right now is just to make fitness accessible to people. So right now I'm building the hybrid routine, which is going to be based on progressive exercise. So your audience is already familiar with calisthenics and progressive calisthenics. So I'll speed through this, but just for anyone, just in case someone, is watching just because of me and they don't really know yet. So bodyweight exercise, pushups, pull-ups, leg raises, bridges, things like that. If it makes them progressive and regressive in some ways, it means we can find a variation of those exercises that work for you. That's really what I focus on. And I was saying to Phil beforehand, right before we were doing this recording, that I never really intended to target the demographic that I have now, which I would say it's fair to say skews beginner, nothing else. Like we have some advanced lifters, some people who aren't interested in calisthenics at all, but they just watch it just because they like the coffee vibe and, they like watching the videos, and I love them for that. But skews beginner, I think, is definitely fair. And that just really came from the content I was putting out at the beginning when I had no audience, and the people who responded and the people that I answered to at the time. And it was a surprise to me. There was a surprise to me that there was this demand for this, because before I did hybrid calisthenics, I didn't spend a lot of time on social media. Mm-hmm. I had like 200 Facebook friends, in 2019, which is not a lot for someone of my generation and age. Even someone who just randomly went to my school has like a couple of thousand. So it's like, I didn't spend a lot of time on social media. So I thought, based on my knowledge of it, that it's going to be flashier stuff. It's going, we're going to do like human flags. We're going to do like one-arm pull-ups, which even as in the upper echelon is almost standard. It's not even considered advanced. But I thought like, oh, that'll get people's attention. And then they'll listen to what I have to say. And that kind of worked. But what really seemed to resonate was the stuff where it was like, hey, if you can't do a push-up or if you can't do a deep squat yet, here's how you can build up. And that's what really seemed to resonate. So that's who I am, a basis of it, and a general area of what I cover nowadays. This is general movement and making it progressive and accessible to everyone.
Wow. Super interesting stuff already. Because you're doing the beginner videos. even though you can do a one-arm pull-up, and like to give you some social proof to our like elite listeners now, you are like a really strong guy. Like you can do one-arm pull-ups. Like, can you tell us a little bit about your level in workout right now?
Yeah, I mean, look, it really depends on who you're talking to. And that's like, that's the same thing with like, as you know, through entrepreneurship and stuff, right? Like if you're talking to someone, you're like, yeah, I had like, you know, like a 500K month the other day, you know, not me, but like if you say that, you know, to like a regular person, they might be like, whoa. And they might think that you're flexing, but you know that there's people out there who are just like, you know, I made that, you know, Tuesday when I did literally nothing, you know, for them, that's nothing. So that's, you know, so there's, I always want to be aware of who I'm talking to. And I want to address both of it a little bit. So yes, I have spent a few years in calisthenics. I can do, you know, the hardest thing I do probably right now is like half range of motion, one arm handstand pushup against the wall. But that's because I pursued it intently for a while. Yeah, one arm pull-ups is something that I learned fairly early on. And again, you know, I don't weigh that much, so it's a little bit easier for me. You know, human flags came, they probably come a lot easier to me than the lever movements, front lever and back lever. Those are things that I can do, but I'm still, you know, like recently I was like, well, you know, I'll look into that. What I really built my foundation on was dynamic pressing, which has really changed. I've really changed my approach nowadays. So it was not dynamic movement. So, you know, I instead of working towards levers right away, I wanted to work on different forms of one-arm pushups. That's kind of where I spent my time. Looking back, there are probably better ways I could have spent my time so I would have more diverse skills. This is like really getting into the details of it. But for example, after you can do a one-arm push-up, which is something that it feels like everyone and their dog can do, right? Everyone and their grandma can do a one-arm push-up, you know, but it's like just the simple idea of taking, of making a more triceps focused exercise and chest focused, but just like moving your arm from off to the side to underneath your sternum and going straight up and down is something very, very few people can do, you know, even the upper echelon. Now, do you want to argue that's because they're pursuing levers and one-arm planches, you know, and Maltese crosses and stuff and not this? Yeah, certainly, definitely is. It definitely is part of it. But that's why I thought, I was like, you know, that's what appealed to me at first. I thought that was more functional. You know, I pursued that for a few years. I got, you know, fairly far in that. And then, you know, even just like, it really was a year ago when I'm like, well, I'm doing this now. I would like to polish up my other skills and see. So that's kind of where I'm at now. My training right now is really involves, I would say, mostly isometrics, both body weight and just like chain and spring isometrics. And just I really retain calisthenics for mobility is where I am right now. Not super high. Once again, depends on who I'm talking to, because like you say, like we describe one-arm pushups or one-arm pull-ups as social proof. But for some people, it's just like, well, if you can't do 20 of them, you might as well just go home. Because it's like, you're still a beginner. Like, go back and train before you talk about it. We don't want to hear you talk until you can do that. Right. I mean, maybe not 20, but like 10, you know, like there are some people who it's just another level. And I definitely want to be aware of who I'm talking to. And I really don't feel a need to hide who I am. You know, it's like some people are way stronger than I am, and congratulations to them. You know, and some people, they don't even want to. That's why I think some people may be confused as to why I'm spending some time on this. But some people feel bad when I say that, when I'm like, well, you know, like I want to be aware of myself. But when I say, yeah, that's not really that high level, then they feel bad about themselves because they're like, well, you know, like I just started working out at, you know, age 35. You know, I really haven't gotten anywhere. I haven't saying that I'm below novice because he called himself a novice. So it's not, you know, I'm not trying to make anyone feel bad or worse. I'm just trying to be honest to myself, where it's just like, here's where I am. Here's what I'm working on. And if you just started, no worries. No worries. You can, wherever you're at, you can build up. So just trying to address all people there.
Yeah. Because it's an interesting topic, because there are so many levels and so many different approaches in calisthenics, where it's hard for somebody who is even in this podcast, you know, like I interview elite athletes and they sometimes say, yeah, I learned the planche in 9 months, but like I took really, really long. And like you can learn it in 3 to 5 months. So, and I'm also thinking, yeah, what does somebody think who is like working on the planche since 5 years and not unlocking it, which is not something completely unusual.
Right.
So,
yeah. You know, and it's a different, you know, it's a world where, you know, there, calisthenics is still underrated. You know, I got to say, even as well known, you know, as some brands are, you know, like I think the biggest calisthenics channel on YouTube is still, I think, Thinx, right? You know, there's other big ones out there. And then there's people like Andrea LaRosa, who I don't, you might've interviewed. I don't know if he speaks English, but very, very impressive athlete, if nothing else. But like the where they talk, like obscure Facebook forums or sometimes their app, and you know, and it's like relatively smaller YouTube videos where they talk about the technique of this stuff, I think it's still underrated, because I think if the community really hasn't hit the stride where it's like, okay, this is the stuff that definitely works now, and this is what we can spend our time on. And this is what will work together. And this is kind of what happened in fitness in the 20th century. You know, people have to, you know, the importance of like knowing what works and seeing it from yourself, not just through scientific study, but through like the popularization of like what people are talking about is super important. Because think about this, I believe, and someone can fact check me on this and correct me, which is very open, but I believe, I recently read that people thought a bench press beyond a certain amount was impossible. Guess what that amount was? It was 400 pounds. You know, they thought a 400 pound bench press was impossible, I think, until Doug Hepburn did it. Again, feel free to fact check me on that. And then after he did it, a year later, I think he did like 500. So it's like, you know, after first, so we've hit that stage where it's like, can these things be done? Imagine if you didn't have the internet and you're like, wow, you know, and you, in your mind, you envision the planche. You're like, well, it's probably impossible, right? Mm-hmm. It's probably impossible. And then like, let's say you have some talent and you got to like, what was basically a advanced tuck planche. And you're like, okay, you know, I might be the strong, like you're like this small village, you know, in America. You're like, yeah, I might be the strongest person in the world. You know, and to your knowledge, that might be true, right? that might be true. But I think first we have to see people who are doing that. You know, and then it's like you talk to the right ones, the ones who don't just have natural talent, but build up in a progressive way. And they say, oh, this is what works. Because I think that's the key. That's why I'm talking about this. Yes, of course, there's foundational strength. Then there's your proportions, you know, like how your limb length, you know this, you know, then there's technique. And there's some genetics. But I think the reason why there's such a big difference in ability sometimes, where someone's like, I take like 10 years time to learn a planche, and some people are like, yeah, I spent like five, you know, some people get in a couple months just because, you know, of the stuff they do. And I think it depends on how they train. You know, there's genetics, but there's also technique in how they train. You know, I mean, if you think about it, it makes perfect sense. Like, you know, some people are training for isometric things through mostly dynamic movement, which helps. But then it's like, well, then what about like principle of specificity and everything? And it's just like, you know, imagine a day without the internet where someone's working towards a bench press. That's why I brought up that example. And they're like, well, maybe the best way to train is to do like, best way to train for a 400 pound bench press is like 135, but perfect form for many, many reps. Turns out, you know, not really the case, you know. And then it's like, well, no, it's five sets of five, you know, doing half your max. And then some people think that, but it's not really the case. So I think first we have to see, we have to have the social proof, you know, and the community of seeing people do this, which is where we are now. And right now we are currently in the midst of like, okay. So this is the best way to do it. You know, everyone has a tutorial on the planche, you know, but, you know, I think soon it'll become very apparent when we look back in 20, 30 years, you know, or maybe shorter. I don't want to blow anyone's mind, like maybe less time than that, where people will look back and be like, oh, okay, like this guy was very talented. You know, he could do multiple levers and, you know, and flags and stuff, but his advice wasn't necessarily the best. And that's not his fault. You know, he worked with what he had now, And I think that's what we'll experience. And you see that through lifters nowadays. Full respect to Eugen Sandow. Sorry if I'm mispronouncing his name, but like considered the father of modern bodybuilding because he was the first person to build his proportions based on fixed proportions. He measured Greek statues. But in his book, Strength and How to Obtain It, I think he talks about like self-resistant techniques. And in his mind, he's like, yeah, you can use dumbbells to work your muscles, but you could also sit here and just tense your muscles and it'll be the same effect. Turns out, no, not at all. That's like, that'd be cool if that was the case. And he's like, for him, you know, and I mean, back then he had the social proof, right? You know, some of his stuff might've been lionized a little bit, still a very strong guy. It's like, so if someone says, yeah, this is how you get strength, you know, I wouldn't disagree with him. You know, it's like, that's his idea. He's a strong man. He knows what he's doing. But as we look back with modern information, it's like, well, that was not correct. He basically stated that dumbbells were there just for entertainment, which is not the case, right? So I think that's what we're talking about. By the way, in case you and your listeners have noticed, or you have noticed, I give very lengthy answers. So if you want me to do, like, I think that's the product byproduct of both my personality and doing coffee with Hampton. So if you want me to do shorter stuff, I can. And if you want me to elaborate, that's fine as well.
It's perfect. I think like it's super interesting to talk to you, to listen to you. I like it. Maybe we can go back a few years. Can you tell us about your beginnings in the sport? I guess in the beginning you also didn't have all the information that you have today, all the knowledge, all the books read, the videos watched, whatever. How did your beginning in calisthenics look like?
Okay. So in the very beginning, I was just a very active kid. You know, like I was born relatively athletic. You know, I could run a little, like based on a playground, I could run a little faster, I could go a little bit longer. I was better at explosive movement. I was better at sprints than I was long distance running. Loved recess, did all this. So that's the very, very beginning. I was raised by my father and a lot of his friends, by men and some women who were very interested in martial arts. You know, they did a lot of like karate, they did some wrestling, jujitsu, all kinds of things. And, you know, as you know, a lot of these martial arts disciplines, they really focused on calisthenics. What was it like? You know, like push-ups, basic calisthenics, push-ups, sit-ups, things like that, more than weightlifting. And possibly because of this, like, you know, again, it's hard to get rid of a belief. I think there used to be a belief that weightlifting would make you slow and inefficient in combat. Which is why I think a lot of martial artists, even now knowing that there are definitely ways where you can strength train without getting slower and you'll get faster. Even because of that, I think just because it's been passed down, it's in like the culture of martial arts to have calisthenics. So that's really where I started. And, you know, back then it was very simple stuff. It was like push-ups and sit-ups, you know, and it was really numbers, as you know. That's how a lot of people first learned about calisthenics, as increasing numbers. You know, that like there's no different, there's only one kind of push-up, there's only one sit-up, what are you talking about? And it's like, well, no, there's like what there's like push-up and one-arm push-up. You know, that's how it is, you know, and people are like, wow, this guy, he once could do like 500 pushups. And I'm like, wow, 500 pushups. That's incredible. I want to get there, you know, and it turns out, you know, that's like, you know, if you put in some work and you don't weigh that much, it's not that hard to do, especially if you break it up in multiple sets. And this is like I'm taking it from the beginning. I'm going to kind of rush through so we don't spend too much time. You know, around like age 17, I did have to drop out of school. It's minorly related to this. I dropped out of school in eighth grade because my mom got sick and I had to help run the family business. So that's minorly related to what I'm about to say. But I did go back later and finish. I didn't go to high school, but I graduated from college. At age 17, I didn't go to school and I worked full time. And that we usually didn't get home until like 9, 10 p.m. And we would watch TV, you know, whatever. We watched TV. And I, you know, I don't know what the catalyst was, but I remember I was like, you know, I'm going to start doing some push-ups regularly, because I, you know, like I was active, but I didn't have a regular routine. So for me, the idea of like, okay, I'll just do push-ups every commercial break. So for an hour long program, you know, every time I would see a commercial, it'd be 3 minutes. I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to do push-ups. Like, yeah. So I started doing about like 100 a day, you know, and I'm like, oh, this actually got a lot easier. So I, you know, my first, you know, entering adulthood, you know, age 18 and so, I was doing about 500 push-ups a day, you know, and that's like, you know, not really any other exercise. You know, when I saw a pull-up bar, I'd be like, ooh, pull-up bars, you know, but that, you know, I was doing that for no reason other than just because I thought that's what fitness was, right? It's like no one really sits you down and gives you a handbook, even in PE, not really much. But a few years in, I was like, I should probably do other exercises too. Okay. Wow. Well, you know, it's like, you know, muscular imbalance, all these things, like I knew these terms, but it's not something it's definitely in the forefront of your mind, right? I didn't follow those channels. I almost hate to say this, but I wasn't inspired by a YouTube fitness person really to work out. It really just wasn't what resonated with me, you know. Full respect to these people who are doing, you know, your former guests, you know, yourself, all these people who are doing awesome things. Congratulations. It is not really what resonated with me. Because I never watched it. I might've liked it had I really gotten into it. And I was like, well, like I'm going to start doing some other exercises. This is how fast things go by, because some of your viewers will listen to this and just laugh because they'll think it's ridiculous. But there was a time period where a book called Convict Conditioning came out, and that was a lot of people's introduction to calisthenics, because I remember my friends talking about it, and they're not in this world. They got the books because it was popular. It was probably like it was trending at the time, so they got it and they introduced me to it. I'm like, oh. So and I looked at the progressions and everything, and just like it or not, you know, I know the book is, you know, the method is controversial amongst like some of the bodyweight fitness community. I understand that. But that was my introduction to the idea of progressive calisthenics. So the idea that you could break this down into it. And I studied abroad at age 22 in Germany. Where are you located? Are you in Germany?
Germany.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Great. Great. So I was near Koblenz. I was in Ballendar. I was at a school called Beihau. And great time, beautiful area. If you have a chance, please visit Germany. Please visit the area. But what was different for me as an exchange student and different for me living my life here in the US, once again, something that's gonna make people laugh. And this time, you know, full on, I agree with you laughing. I was used to having not Wi-Fi, but like almost unlimited data everywhere I went. Okay, you know, like we had like, I could go anywhere and I could look up Facebook, I could scroll through YouTube and everything. I didn't spend a lot of time at home. Turns out, you know, like whatever phone plan I had in Germany, I had like 200 megabytes. And then the rest was, I was being charged like $10 per 100 megabytes. I'm like, I better turn off that. So that's something I did a lot. Well, turns out, you know, when you are, because I'm someone who likes to go out and walk a lot. I like to go out coffee shops. I don't like to sit at home where you have Wi-Fi. I like to go out. Turns out when you don't scroll through Facebook or social media when you're eating and out, you read. You know, so I was like, huh. So that's really when I read it. But then, and then I read a lot of texts on calisthenics. That's what I mean. It's like, I really, for someone who does video now, I was really more inspired by authors. And if anyone's ever read the book Convict Conditioning, most people just look at their exercises and like, well, this is not optimum because of this. A lot of the cool stuff that I got from it was Paul Wade's writing style. Because, you know, for someone who's writing from the perspective of a prisoner, and we can go more into this if you want, just because it's something that the calisthenics community does kind of know about. And I spent a lot of time reading it. I've emailed with Paul Wade before, and he has a very inspiring writing style. You know, I find that hard to deny. Like he gets people pumped and gets people going. And that's part of where I got how I teach calisthenics nowadays from. Because, you know, again, someone, you know, it's written for men, you know, it's written for men, very masculine environment, you know, where it's like you have to get strong and muscular. So bad things don't happen to you in prison. But for that, you know, he's actually very kind to beginners. You know, he's just like, well, you start off with wall pushups and then you build up to these inclines. No, good job. And this is already quite strong. Let's keep you going. And a big part of it, and this is like tying back to what we were talking about before, the missing piece of, you know, where training is, you know, most people, they said, well, if you want to build strength, you want to stay low. One of the keys that really seemed to work well for myself and for others, why I think like the content that I spread resonates, is some of the higher repetitions earlier on. You know, when you spend higher repetitions and you don't just jump into a harder exercise, he's like, yeah, spend some time building these repetitions. He spends chapters explaining why it is, which sadly is ignored because everyone just screenshotted, you know, the exercises page. And he went into that. And that thing that really helped a lot of people. Unfortunately, so two things. Some people don't like reading. You know, no judgment. They don't really like reading. And I mean, I don't have as much time to read nowadays as I would like. And also some people, they don't like the prison aspect. So sadly, this inspiring author with a good method really wasn't lost. So like when I started sharing this, I used that as a foundation. And I made my old thing. And I'm like, this thing works a little bit better. I stopped it, but I used that as a foundation to really start spreading calisthenics because that's really what I first got into, you know. And obviously, as you grow, you know, first of all, like for example, that's probably one reason why I focus more on dynamics and one arm pressing and one arm pulling, and not so much on statics, just because I was inspired from this start. And it probably would have been very different had I been inspired by a YouTube channel where they put, you know, front levers and like one arm front levers and planches on it. I probably would have like explored that way beforehand just because that's what I was exposed to. But that's really the beginning of it. And a lot of it was also just personal experimentation. And then there's another level when you start doing it for a living. And once again, this is already a long story, so I'm trying to condense it. You know, and you start thinking about it. And then really the question that I approach nowadays is why not? It's like all these things that we take for granted. I'm like, why not? You know, it's like, well, this move is impossible. I'm like, well, why isn't it? You know, so like that's really where I'm at right now, where I try to experiment a lot in my training. And I hope to get, I hope to find both new things I can accomplish, but also document a journey and teach people how to get there, so I can help others do that.
Well, that's a long story, which is super interesting. Do you get a lot of knowledge even nowadays from books? And what books would you recommend to people listening? Like, is there another calisthenics book that you would recommend more nowadays?
Nowadays, to be honest, for most people, I would just like, because of people who are probably watching this and listening to this, you're probably gonna resonate more with video content, mm-hmm. or social content. So that's what I would look into. I would just find a YouTube channel or even an Instagram channel. These people, there's some people who are very good at teaching and very good at calisthenics and they're not great at social media. So like you don't look for that's like the highest subscribed ones. Look for one that works for you. Look for one that breaks it down the way that you like. First of all, because you can also ask that person questions. You know, when they have like 10K and fewer subscribers, but they're very good at what they do, there's a good chance they'll answer your question much more than like, full respect and love to him, Chris Heria, because like he gets a lot of, just as an example of someone who gets a lot of comments. So find someone that you like and you resonate with. It doesn't have to be someone who's famous, because you might be able to get what's essentially tutoring, because you know they're like, oh, I finally got a comment, I'm gonna answer all of them. So that's what I would recommend, and just personalize your journey from there. And it really depends on where you are. Like you might already be, you might be like me, like not that big and fairly lean. So you might be able to do a bunch of relatively advanced moves, but not some of this harder stuff. So find something you like.
Cool. you already talked about your weight two times. These are the questions that we always get from the people. If I don't ask them in the interview, they will always be in the comment section. How old are you right now?
I'm 28 years old.
28. And how heavy and how tall?
Right now I'm about, I'm trying to think of it. I'm about 154 pounds. That would be 70 kilograms, more or less. Mm-hmm. And my height is about 5'8" or 173 centimeters. Not a very big person. And the reason I pause is because I wanted to give both measurements.
That's perfect. I was already taking my mobile phone. I have translate. But anyways, you already have it in your head. That's cool.
And I bounce a lot in between the weights sometimes. My heaviest that, I haven't really been that heavy on social media yet is about 165. I'll probably experiment with going to 165. So heavier than 70 kilograms, I'll probably experiment with being 80 kilograms is probably the heaviest I'll go that I can see right now.
Why is that? Why do you want to try it?
Oh, I mean, just for fun, again, why not? Right. This is not something that, there's no way to document. There's no study on this. There's no way you can document this. But seeing how a lot of these old time strongmen wrote, people when once you who trained with calisthenics, this is really before the modern gym existed the way it does, to where you can go almost anywhere. You have these fully stocked gyms. Seeing the way they talk about calisthenics makes me think that, how some people say, well, I don't want to get too heavy because then it's too hard for me to do these levers or whatever. These old time people, I almost think the way they thought was, I want to get strong and heavy as possible, both in muscle and fat. So because if all you have is a one arm push up and you don't really know a harder variation or one leg squat, it's well, I'm 150 pounds. The only way to make this harder is if I'm 250 pounds. So it's the idea is you want to get very big. So it's just I want to see how my body functions at a heavier weight. If it does really well, then which I suspect that it'll do okay. But I think that if I push myself to 190 or 200 pounds, which would be 90 kilograms, that'd be a little heavy for my frame, which is really not that big.
Yeah, interesting. Because I feel that you're also somebody who is focused on health in general. Because I saw a few months ago, I saw some habits that you have with the salt. I'm missing the English word, but after brushing. No, how is it called?
Gargle.
Gurgle, with salty water. So I experience you as somebody who is also focused on health, and I can imagine that 80 kg or 90 is not the weight that your body is naturally made for, so it would be something that you have to force yourself to. Or how do you think about it?
I'm also nowadays, I'm just for me, I'm sorry, I'm gonna try it and then see how things go.
Yeah.
I'm hesitant to be the person who turned down something, couldn't really answer why he turned it down. And later on, if I'm older, I'm like, well, now I wonder what would have happened if I did this. Mm-hmm. Right. And, theoretically, if I put on enough muscle and, I do it intelligently and I don't just get fat, that'd be weird. You know, Hampton getting fat, because I make almost daily videos. So you someone would make the progression of Hampton from regular Hampton to fat Hampton, in 2025. And I was like, oh, well, just so people know my personality, that wouldn't really offend me. I think that's funny. I'm like, wow, I did get kind of fat. But I can still do all this stuff. It's interesting. It's something I want to try. And that's really how I approach my training now, is I try different things. I will say this, weight gain is not my priority right now. Mm-hmm. Right now it's mostly probably through isometric strength. I'm still relatively new, as in several months to a year into my experimentation of that. But I think it has a lot of potential, and it's something that we can talk about later if you like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, are you in general somebody who is it easier for you to lose weight or to gain weight?
Lose weight. Yeah, it is definitely easier for me to lose weight. If I don't pay attention, I'll lose like 10, 15, 20 pounds.
Yeah. So you also forget to eat, or like you just have to eat so much that it's sometimes hard to keep up, right?
You know, I hate to admit this, but that used to be the case. But I think my metabolism has slowed down as I'm getting older.
Oh, okay.
I still eat like several, you know, like I can pack away like 3,000 calories, and you know, like I have to hit that general area before I start losing to maintain weight. But I don't really necessarily forget to eat as much anymore, just because I think because I'm used to it. I am someone who, you know, if I get to working, both working and working out, but especially like doing any content related stuff, if I'm here or I'm filming or I'm doing stuff, you know, I'll go like 24 hours without eating, you know, and not on purpose. I'm just like, oh, well, 24 hours have passed, you know, because, you know, and like, for me, it was just like, because I wouldn't eat at like until 8 or 9 p.m. at night sometimes. And I'm like, well, like, why am I so hungry? That was only a 12 hour fast. I'm like, no, it's not. It was like a 23 hour fast. No wonder I'm hungry. I'm like, so there's that. So I don't forget to eat, but I certainly could because of my lifestyle. I'm very productive, production driven. So I like doing that. But I had to consciously decide to gain weight. That's something I've always had, you know, and, you know, depending on who's listening right now, some people are like, man, I hate you for saying that. You have to consciously put on weight. Whereas it's like, well, it's also not great either, because I mean, I'm not always drop, like, you know, if you don't eat, you're not just dropping fat, you know, you're losing strength, you're losing muscle, the stuff that takes a while to put on. And when I was sick last November, you know, and like, I didn't really feel like eating for a couple of weeks, I dropped like 15 pounds. It was and fairly quickly, definitely not healthy because I was sick at the time. So this is something that this is how my body is.
Yeah. And you always think that everybody else has it, like it's easier for everybody else. Like I can imagine a lot of skinny guys wish they would have like more mass that they can turn into muscle. Like I can remember myself as a young guy, like thinking, ah, oh, damn it. Like I have these friends who are like massive, and for them, they just have to train to transform the fat into muscle. It's so easy, you know, like, and today everybody has his challenges, and for us it takes longer to build muscle because we need to eat a lot, and we need to give something to the muscle to be able to grow.
So that's where you started too, like you were in a similar boat. I gotcha.
Definitely, like super, super skinny, super, like I thought I could eat as much. And like, I always thought I eat already a lot, like, because if you don't have the comparison to somebody who is like eating double, like two times the plates that you are eating, and for you, it's already a lot what you eat. Yeah, like it's all about standards.
Yeah, of course. This is something I think will help some viewers. What was the game changer for you when you were like, well, I think I'm eating a lot. Like, why am I not gaining weight? What was the game changer where you're like, that's what I needed to do?
Yeah, like the one thing mentally was definitely seeing friends eating double my portion. For them, this was a lot. Like I thought eating, I don't know, half a kebab, like with friends, I thought that's a lot, like a big, big bread with everything. And then there was this one friend who ate like two of them, and for him it was like, oh, now I'm full. So but the thing like that really got me gaining weight was definitely like, I'm not talking about, because you also said a lot of gaining weight things are not healthy, was definitely drinking a big shake with oats and milk and almonds and all this stuff before sleeping. So another 2000 calories before sleeping, this wasn't healthy. So, but this got me like a lot of weight.
Well, what got me, see, like I, it would be interesting if I had that experience. But growing up, I was always the guy, you know, people are like, how are you eating so much food when you are not that big? Okay. So, you know, and a part of it might be because of what I was saying, because like I in my mind, like I naturally go longer without food for a while, but when it's time to eat, I'll eat a lot of food.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So there is that. So I had my portions were bigger, but I think it was the regularities. Like it's bigger now, but are you getting more overall? Maybe not. Yeah. So the game changer for me, and the reason I brought it up in case it could help anyone, was tracking, where like I used an app called MyFitnessPal, but there's like, you know, there's a bunch of them out there. MyFitnessPal has some controversy over not being the most accurate, I guess, which I cannot really argue with. It helped me establish a standard, whether it was like, I could see whether it's accurate or not. I was going lower, I was going higher. I'm like, well, I need to maintain it a little bit. And having that standard is like, okay, now I can put on, you know, and anytime I bring that up, someone's like, well, if tracking gives them like eating disorders, it might, you know, that doesn't work for everyone. That was the game changer for me to regularly be able to lose weight and gain weight as I wanted to.
True. Tracking is really like looking at the numbers, because you also already drew the comparison to entrepreneurship and to business and to social media. Like looking at the numbers never lie, basically. Mm-hmm. And if you track and you see throughout the day, I only ate 1,800 calories, even though I had this extremely big meal, which was like 1,400. If I only ate an apple in the morning and like a small, I don't know, yogurt in the evening, that's right. Still like 1,800.
Right. So, exactly.
Yeah. Interesting. No, I forgot the question.
I'm sorry, man. It's like I imagine I'm a difficult person to interview sometimes. Because
it's super nice.
One thing.
But you're like, you're bringing up so many like topics, and now I have it. Like talking about a diet in general. Like you said that you want to gain weight healthy, but overall, how does your diet look like? Are you somebody who is eating really healthy? Do you have cheat meals, cheat days sometimes? How does it look like?
Okay, so and this probably wouldn't surprise someone because I'm not a bodybuilder, but you know. A strict bodybuilder probably have a stricter diet. I don't really think of like cheat meals or cheat days. You know, in my mind, I think I naturally eat relatively healthy to where I don't really stop myself from eating what I want. You know, but that works for me because what I want isn't just milkshakes and candy. You know, that doesn't work for everyone. For gaining weight, you know, from where I am now, so like, because I've been through this path before, from like 150 to 160. So like from 68 kilograms to like 75 kilograms, I can just like increase my meal frequency because I naturally want to eat like one meal a day, you know, one or two meal. Like it's not a lot. Just because it's, you know, I feel better if I get up and I have some water and I start working, and then at the end of the day, I eat. I like that feeling. That's what I naturally want to do. Adding in a second meal really helps me gain some weight. Okay, adding a third meal, it takes a while for my body to get used to it, because at first I'm like, I don't want to eat this. You know, that helps me gain some weight. Not saying that's the healthiest way to do it. You know, definitely don't force feed yourself. You increasing meal size would also help, and. Because I'm trying to make this as valuable as possible for others. And if you're listening intently to this, you likely struggle with this. What really helped me with nutrient dense foods. You know, even just a snack, like a pack of macadamias, like if you're looking to put on some weight, a pack of macadamias will help you meet your caloric goals. Because a pack of them is like 1,000 calories. And they're like, you know, you put them all in the palm of your hand and you can get that. Again, that's not all of that is protein. So, you know, be careful how much you eat. And they're also like 10 bucks, literally like a handful is like 10 bucks. So 10 US dollars. So it might damage your pocketbook more than your health, but that's something that helped me meet my caloric needs. But from beyond that, then I had to start scaling portion size. Then I had to be like, well, I'm going to eat a little bit more, or I'm going to eat some snacks with that. Really diet, but also training. Training is like when I hit a point where it's just like, I feel like I'm overeating. Like this was like several years ago. Like I'm overeating, but I'm not gaining weight like I used to. It's like, I just wasn't going as hard as I needed to during my exercises. Right. You know, cause you know, in calisthenics, especially if you're someone who wants to pursue levers, you know, and flags and stuff where, you know, having some meat on your bones at the end of your bones actually makes it harder. You're not really thinking about this. You're thinking about strength. So you want to stay fresh. But you know, and once again, as you know, if you want to put on good muscle, a lot of it involves pushing yourself. There's a study, which surprises some people, and it surprises me. And we can get into details of how that study was done, where it shows that the weight you use wasn't as important for muscle growth as going to failure or going to near failure on it. As you know, like actual failure is very difficult. And going near failure on it. And they had someone using 90%, they had some people using 90% of their one rep max and training to near failure. And they had someone using 30% of the one rep max and going near failure. And they had very similar amounts of muscle growth over, I believe, a 2-month period. So another factor for me that I know nowadays is you gotta push hard. And you can't do that as easily. You can't do that at all with like just a regular, oh, you scared me. I had someone walk in with regular front lever training.
Nice. I saw you. I thought you saw a ghost or something.
So. It was actually my wife. you know, and it's just, I didn't expect her to be here. This is my office. It's not where I live and sleep. I'm usually alone by myself. So I turn around and someone's walking towards me with grocery bags. Okay. It's just like, it's food and groceries. I'm like, oh, and it's kind of dark. So it's like a dark hallway. So you see someone walking towards you in the dark hallway. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Nice.
While Phil is thinking about his next question, I was really, I'll talk a little bit about my channel and how I've built it and just like the stuff other than calisthenics that I explore that I've become known for, not even on purpose. And I think I started doing Coffee with Hampton because people asked me questions about mental health and just more of like a mental, emotional, and spiritual approach to training. Because once again, as I've talked about before, fitness doesn't exist in a vacuum. It'd be interesting if, you know, we could separate our physical fitness. So, yeah, I do this many reps. I do this many, you know, I do this exercise, you know, with our emotional health. But no, you know, like all that is tied in. You know, when you're going through a bout of depression, it's much harder, if not, it's outright impossible to keep the same training or train at all. You know, even finances, if you're going bankrupt, you probably won't be able to focus on training as well as you can, or at least you shouldn't. You have more pressing issues. So I talk about these things as a way to try to bring everything together and also just share what's on my mind, because we do have a lot of younger members in our community. And I think this is one of the things I wanted to do, and one of the things that fortunately has happened, where we bring a lot of people who aren't even interested in calisthenics or are interested in calisthenics, but are at my level or beyond. You know, they're very kind to me. They're like, well, they never say that they're beyond. I'm like, no, dude, you've done this for a decade longer. You're advanced. My feelings are never hurt by that. But we have a community of people where we can talk about things that are affecting all of us, no matter our level. Whereas, you know, whether it's, you know, anxiety or just dealing with a fear, which is something people deal with at all levels, the fear of failure, where you think, well, you know, like, I'm going for this goal, but what if I fail? What if I have family and friends who are bringing me down? What if I'm very lonely? All these things can apply to athletes and people of all levels, you know, whether or not you're into fitness at all. So that's my little riff while Phil was thinking, because I threw him off track. I'll take accountability for that. I throw people off track.
Nice. Yeah. Thanks for sharing. And I think that's a super, super nice thing that, people can really like need in the days of social media and the days of, also all these things, social media putting a lot of pressure on people, a lot of input that wasn't there a few years ago. So I'm thinking that's super, super nice for the people. We've been on like you talked about training until failure, and what's your opinion in general about training until failures? Would you recommend it to everyone? Because this is something also athletes in the interviews are always like, it's the ones say, yeah, you have to go until 100% every training. The others say, stay at 70% so you don't get sore. Like, well, what's your opinion on this topic?
Okay, so interesting, because you're right. I have been asked this before, and I have to quote my friend Sonder, I believe, is because I follow him on social media. We've talked, but I don't remember. He is he's also a street workout athlete, and the interviewer, I think, talked to me first. And at the time, I was like, yeah, I'm a fan of going there sometimes, but you know, there are risks associated with that, and you don't want to injure yourself. And I think he talked to me first, and then he talked to Sonder. And he might have quoted that. Maybe he didn't tell them it was from me. And because the video started out with Sonder saying, yeah, there are risks of not training to failure. And he says, well, what's that? He said, well, there's the risk of not improving. You know, so I was like, huh, you know, that does make sense. For me, if you want to summarize it, yeah, I think almost everyone can benefit from training failure at some point, especially if your goal is hypertrophy. You know, I think the research and anecdotal evidence, you know, that's the thing, is like when people are feeling it and there's research behind it, that's something you really need to pay attention to. Is that if you're looking for muscle growth, going near failure is something that's going to help a lot. If you're doing it, if you're doing it safely, you don't want to use too much momentum. And if you're kipping a lot towards the end of your reps where you have no control, just because you are near failure and you fall down and hurt yourself, then you are by definition not making as much progress as you could if you stayed healthy and didn't go to failure, because your arm wouldn't be broken. So there are things like that. There are some people who don't care about hypertrophy really, or it's like it's very tangential. I would say for skill work, you could theoretically never go to failure. For skill work, I'm talking like planches, front levers, back levers, things like that. And again, it's not going to hurt your training, or it's not going to destroy your training. But for skill work, you don't really have to, just because you want to be operating near your maximum potential at the time of doing this. You want all your muscle fibers to be that you can to fire and well, and have to balance all these things that happen that collapse way before failure, handstands, things like that. You don't have to go to failure. For regular strength training, sometimes to failure, you know, I think almost everyone would agree that sometimes failure, you know, you can experiment. And for muscle training, fairly often, right? And now soreness, interesting thing, you know, we've associated failure with soreness and, you know, and DOMS and just like not being able to exercise as much, because, you know, hypertrophy training by its nature is draining. You know, there's a bunch of things that have to happen for your muscles to grow. But one of the things is we have to have the metabolic fatigue, you know, and we have to deplete our energy stores to the point where our muscles basically just say, that was really bad. What if that happens again? We better put on some more, you know, they're survival prepping, you know, they're putting on more stores. So in order to do that, you do have to train. And as a result, consider this, if you do that every time you train, you won't be able to train as often at your peak, right? You know, that, I mean, and once again, this is something someone can feel if like, I don't believe that. And they try it. And then the next day, you won't be able to train at your peak. This is how it is. If you properly bring yourself to failure, it's going to take some time for your body to build back up. And as a result, you won't be able to train as often as you do if you don't go to failure, right? However, you know, we've taken a look at some things like that's really anecdotal evidence from dynamic movement or lifting, whether it's body weight or weights. When you're talking about isometrics, and something like overcoming isometrics, which some people prefer to call pin isometrics, I like to call it overcoming asymmetrics, because pins aren't always involved when you're doing this. You can do it on a rope, you can do it on a chain, you can do it against a tree. When you're doing overcoming isometrics, which is basically pushing or pulling against something that you can't put, that you can't budge, or you can barely budge, like a small tree, like you can just push a little bit to the side. When you're doing that, there's very little muscle damage, which is the primary cause of soreness. You know, microtrauma. You know, people usually attribute that to lactic acid. The microtrauma to your muscles is a big part of the soreness that you feel. However, you can bring yourself to near failure or actual failure. Near failure is where I'm going to go with this. And once you're acclimated to that, because you don't have the muscle damage, you might not feel much soreness the next day. However, you know, you're still for lack of better terminology, you're still drained from it. So you might need to take a day longer to heal. Still, much less recovery time than you would if you did it through lifting. So just some different things that we're exploring as the industry is expanding. We're always growing and learning as the people in our community, our wonderful community, grow and learn. So this is something that people can explore. Like you can go to failure and train more often than we thought.
Oh, that's cool. Talking about exploring, one question that I have to ask, because it was the most requested question in the story sticker for this interview was, will we ever see you doing a straddle planche? Like, is it on your list ever? Like, or is it something that you?
I could probably bust out a pretty shoddy looking straddle planche right now, as you know, that's something that I, it is on my list. It is on my list. At some point I will probably make a tutorial on it. I would like to brush up on it. These are, you know, as a lot of your audience might know, the planche is something that, I'll start with this. The human flag is something that I kind of got just through other training, you know, mm-hmm. I would try it every time I saw a pole, which, you know, when I first heard about human flags, I'm like, why would I try that? And I was like, there are no poles around here. You know, I used a street pole once. I got yelled at by this big German guy. He's like, oh. I was like, oh. And he said a bunch of stuff to me in German that I didn't understand. So like, that's something I kind of got, you know, even before I really explored technique, I could just like, I could kind of sort of do it. It was kind of, it wasn't as nice as it is now. And I was like, okay, so I thought that's how everything else would come. I'd be like, oh, well, next time I try a front lever, I try a back lever, it's going to be better. However, because of how like our scapular strength, our straight arm strength work, you know, it doesn't really seem to apply as much to the levers and the planche. So that's something where I went for a year. I'm like, I don't really think it's progressing. So, and then I was like, well, it's not really something I'm that interested in. But then about a few months ago, I started exploring a little bit more. I could probably bust out a shoddy looking straddle planche right now. But I don't want that right now, because I mean, there's plenty of examples of that out there. If I do it, you know, I want to help people get to it. You know, I have my own thoughts on like, as I'm doing this, I'm journaling what's working for me so I can share that with others. And hopefully it's very low on my priority list of mm-hmm. doing that. But I, you know, because other people are interested in it, I hope I can help them out at some point. But first, I have to get a perfect planche myself.
Sure. And it's super interesting, because the human flag is really like a move where like a lot of people ask me when I'm on the calisthenics park, like, how do you learn the human flag? And it's really a skill that I would say if you continue your training with dips, with push-ups, with like all the basics, and you have like a really, really good fundamental strength, it's a skill that comes quite easily without specific training. But that's totally different for the planche, I think.
Yeah. Why do you think that is? You know, you're involved in this too. What's your opinion on that?
That's a really good question. Like, for me, the planche feels so unnatural. That's what's my first thought. But if I see a human flag, it's not the most natural move of a human being as well. So that's not maybe not the right answer.
For whatever reason, I think you can build up to a human flag with somewhat shoddy technique and iron out your technique over time. Like you can, like your arms are completely straight, all this stuff. But for whatever reason, I think just like the scapular strength and the straight arm strength that you have for the planche is so important that you aren't really going to get it until you really take it seriously. And that was the thing is like, I really didn't like locking out my arms. That seemed unnatural to me at first, just because I didn't do that while I'm pressing. It felt like it was in danger of snapping. Not because of how it felt, but it's just like, you know, like even when I was doing push-ups or pull-ups, it's like, well, you want to maintain, I learned it as you want to maintain tension on your muscles, right? And not go to full lockout. And then, but every planche tutorial was like, go to lockout. I'm like, you know, I'm not gonna do that. And I was like, turns out, yeah, so I had the freedom to not do that, but I also had the freedom to not get better at it. That is something that I've been exploring recently. It's fun. I think it really has to do with like what you were inspired by and how you wanted to get into calisthenics, because as you know, there are very strong individuals in the world who are not interested in doing a planche, you know, and can't do one, right? I don't know. It's like maybe Eddie Hall could bust out a planche. I'd be very impressed. You know, at like I think he's like what 400 pounds, 400 pounds. That might be a world record. Mm-hmm. But he has world records. So there's that. For me, I always just thought the point of training was just to improve my overall life, you know, my quality of living in general. And while like planche and lever stuff and even human flag stuff, I thought that was cool. I thought that was nice, but it's really more for the sake of doing it. In my opinion, even nowadays, I think it's really, you learn it for the sake of doing a planche, you know, a sake of doing a lever. And there is transfer to other calisthenic skills. It does make you stronger. It does increase your core strength. It is strength. But I think that's why I wasn't as drawn to them. And also, I'm just not as advanced in them. Like anyone listening to this, I don't want you to feel like I'm making excuses for it. But it's just like, it's why I haven't really started exploring it until this year. It's just, I felt like there was other stuff that was that was more interesting to me. But once again, in this year, one of the things I really started to work with was experimentation and just kind of like not being as dogmatic about it. And this is something that you just have to be dogmatic about and then be like, okay, you have to choose like, well, I don't want to do this anymore. It's kind of how it is. Yeah. Because, you know, like, let's say you built your entire life on like bench press, squat, deadlift, you know, and things like that. And then someone's like, well, can you do a deep squat? And then he's like, no. And he's like, but then you're like, well, I don't want to do it though. It's not important. But then at some point you're just like, why not? You know, like, well, why don't I do that? You know, like fitness is part of my life. It's not going to hurt me. It's not going to hurt me. It's not going to make me weaker to learn that. You know, and I'm not like, by the way, it's like if you're lifting heavy, I'm not saying lift the same amount in a deep squat. You know, you can lift a little bit, start with your body weight, you know, even if you're very, very strong and then build up with some lighter weight and then heavier weight. And, you know, it's just one of those things where I'm like, well, why don't I try that? And there's kind of this fear, I think. And this is something that I've learned recently and doesn't really go against scientific study, even though it's one of those things that people think will, where I change up my training every couple of months or so. Like I at least change up how I do the exercise. Like if I'm doing isometrics, I might try a different angle. I might try a different grip position. But I allow my curiosity to expand and to kind of run wild as it naturally wants to. And in the past, I told myself not to do that. You know, when I did push-ups, and I was like, well, I'm kind of interested in seeing what I could bench. I'm kind of interested in seeing a shoulder press. Like a lot of these things I've mentioned, I haven't even really gotten to yet. And I'm like, well, I can't because I'm really working towards like this version of like a harder one-arm push-up or something. And I want to spend all my time doing that. I don't want to be the guy who's like chasing different things and doesn't reach all of them. Well, turns out that thing you're chasing is going to take 5, 6, 7 years of dedicated training. And also, here's the kicker. Here's the kicker that, you know, like I feel like we need to research more. As everyone listening to this knows, as you train more and more in any kind of movement or exercise or even discipline, you know, results in your gains, they come very fast at first and they slow down eventually it's almost like it's a crawl. And then you have to do something to break that plateau. You know, some people, they change their eating, they do something else. Sometimes they scale back. These are all different things that involve changing your current routine. And what I found is that when you do change your routine and you allow your curiosity to do different, you do, like let's say you're doing weighted pushups and you're like, well, I want to explore weighted dips. Okay, and then you do that. And then you come back, you know, a month or two later, and turns out, you know, it refreshes. You wouldn't think that, you know, your progress, you know, it gets kickstarted again. You're like, oh, I'm actually better at this now than I was before. Oh, I'm making faster progress again. And people are very quick to write that off, you know, and I was very quick to write it off, you know, because, you know, one of the things they'll cite is like, well, that's muscle confusion theory. And that's been largely debunked. As far as I can tell, yes, muscle confusion theory has been largely debunked in the sense that we're confusing our muscles to make them grow for hypertrophy, but for overall strength and for making ourselves overall stronger, which, you know, you can't really deny that, you know, like downwards pressing, horizontal pressing, upwards pressing, different kinds of strength, different things that we can get stronger in are useful. It does seem to balance off each other. Like if you're doing a lot of horizontal pressing, you're like, well, I want to try, you know, overhead pressing for a little while. And you do that and you come back and son of a gun, you're actually stronger here and you've actually renewed your progress here. Why that is still being researched. Some people say, no, it's not, but I think it is because like you look at joint angle specificity, a very, very simple part of changing your routine where, because one of the arguments against muscle confusion theory, a very good argument in my opinion, is that muscle fibers follow the all or none law. They either fire or they don't. You can't fire a muscle fiber part way. It's either on or it's off. And it doesn't really know like if you're going up, if you're going down, or if you're pushing a dumbbell or a barbell or pushing a body weight. Muscles are muscles. You know, they're not neurons. But while that is true, one of the things that researchers were confused about is like, well, if that's the case, why does joint angle specificity seem to apply somewhat to isometrics? Let's say an isometric bicep curl that someone's doing. You know, if they train that for a few months, you know, with overcoming isometrics, pulling on something they can't move, just above what they can move, but what they can't move, they get very stronger at a 90 degree angle, stronger than they were before in the other angles. And you know, there is transfer to other angles. It's not just that 1 degree, but it seems to apply strongest at that one angle. So it's joint angle specificity. And, you know, you look at some of these research papers and these studies and like one of them said, researchers are not sure why this occurs, but they suspect or like they found something and they're like, this leads us to believe that the reasoning for this, the reason behind this is neurological. There's some reason because the same muscle, you know, similar muscle fibers are being recruited. So why is it stronger at an angle? Why is it stronger at that one angle? You know, and that's something that I think more research will emerge upon as people continue to explore this or as people are more open to trying different parts of their training or trying different things in their training.
Oh. Again, so much input, really interesting. You talked about straight arm and like bent arm, which is something that I also remember in the early days in the gym. Like they always told you not to stretch your arms completely, not to stretch the legs completely. Like, why is that? Where does that come from? And is it still like something common and spread today?
You're asking why I think that's like some people are saying don't lock out, et cetera. Yeah.
Like why did they tell us this like years ago? And like, do you think today it's still like the same thing that like, because of bodybuilding, yeah, it depends. Like. Yeah.
To some extent, I think, but you look at things like what the knees over toes guy is doing. And I think it's getting people to revisit ideas they thought were already established. Because like these are not like internet professors. These are like trained industry professionals who are sometimes telling you don't lock out. People who do this literally for a living, sometimes famously for a living. You know, I don't want to name any names, but you know, they're out there and they're like, yeah, don't lock out, don't do this. So it leads to a lot of confusion. And then you look at the reasoning for it sometimes. Now, on some exercises, you might not want to lock out. I'm not saying definitely do that, but I mean, you know, sometimes locking out for some exercises it turns out it's fine. You look at the reasoning for it and it's like, well, it puts pressure on your tendons. And that's one of the myths of the fitness industry, which I'm very comfortable saying, just because it's gotten to the point where, you know, even though industry professionals are still saying it, you can do a Google search and you can get some studies, you can get some good backing on like why it's no longer the case. But knees over toes, you know, even as I was learning calisthenics back in like, this is before I started doing progressive calisthenics, when I had some information on it, I remember watching a YouTube video and there was this very buff looking guy who looked very credible saying, yeah, when you squat, you don't want to have your knees go over your toes. Okay. And then I was like, huh. You know, I was like, oh, puts pressure on your knee. And it was like, okay, that makes sense. Well, it turns out, you know, progressive pressure on your knee actually strengthens it. You know, and then when you think of that, it's like, well, why? And then again, once again, this is nice because we're towards the end of the podcast and it's tying back to what I was talking about at the beginning. It's like, well, why can't we do that? Why not? And it's like, if it can strengthen your tendons, why don't we do it? And it's like even saying the same with like putting pressure on your bones. It's like, well, but strengthens your bones, why don't we do it? And it's one of those things to where it's just like, this is how growth happens, to where people already know this stuff if you really press on it. And they just have to like put it in their mind and start thinking about it. And like, oh, so there's really no reason why we can't do this. Why don't we start exploring it a little bit more? So I think that was the reason kind of was like they were worried that it would lead to injury or, you know, like torn ligaments and stuff, which is very, very real if you didn't build up to that. If you didn't build up to that with that technique, right? Like to my knowledge, no one's doing a Jefferson curl at the same way they do their deadlift. You know, and they're like, but when you do your deadlift, it's like, well, you never round your back. You know, that's some people round their back, but you know, you never excessively round your lower back. That's horrible. You know, but turns out that's the goal during a Jefferson curl. You know, and it turns out, you know, like being more mobile in that range actually reduces the chance of injury. You know, and strengthens you in that range. Imagine that you being stronger in a movement that you practice. You know, and again, this is one of those things where people are very resistant to at first. You know, but you talk to them, and if they're open-minded enough, they're like, "Huh, that actually makes sense." And then they're like, "But why does no one else do this?" And it's like, "Well, no one's really you know, it's one of those things that's there. It's there, but people aren't really talking about it yet." Another perfect example I can talk about this that people will resonate with is doing a back lever using an you know, often taught with, hang on. Yeah, often taught sometimes with I can show it right now, but it's like when you're upside down, like there's that grip to where you are often taught with an overhand grip, right? Mm-hmm. So when you're upside down, you know, it's your palms are facing up, often taught like that. And one of the arguments was like, well, you know, I remember seeing this comment. It was on this guy's YouTube channel, and the guy was teaching with overhand. And there was a comment underneath. He's like, yeah, I'm in gymnastics and you shouldn't do it with overhand. You should do it with underhand so you can put more pressure on your biceps tendon. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then I remember the commenter, the YouTube guy who was a trained industry professional, both in calisthenics and also, I think he was like a certified strength and conditioning coach. You know, he had credentials. He said, well, okay, I don't know why putting more pressure on my biceps tendon would be a good thing, but I'll try it out. You know, and you know, and I don't know like what his journey was, but nowadays I see him 10 years later and he's teaching it, you know, with that grip. So it turns out, yes, you can strengthen that. But, you know, both what's considered common knowledge that was actually a myth, stuff like the knees over toes stuff, and just anecdotal stuff of people like, well, I went to lockout and I tore a biceps tendon, or I tore my knee. Is why people have that fear of it, and they don't want to do it. But again, they didn't build up to that progressively. They build up in a certain technique, and then they suddenly change their technique. So imagine like you build up to 400 pounds in deadlift. It's like, well, now I'm gonna round my back. It's like, ah, Hampton, you told me to round my back. You know, I was like, well, I didn't tell you to do it at 400 pounds. Okay, so, again, just, like, that's why. It's just one of those things to where it there was a myth, and then some people are trying to, like, well, there's no reason the myth should exist, and then they pass on that knowledge without that warning of, like, build up progressively, and that's why it led to injury, and that's why some people are like, well, it doesn't work. So that's my thought on why.
Really good example also with the back lever. That's like such a myth and like just such a topic that a lot of people talk about with tiered tore biceps tendon, etc. It's such a big fear in the calisthenics scene. So yeah, super interesting. Yeah, we're slowly coming to an end of the interview. I still have the question also out of personal interest, like what are the three habits, like your three habits that you would recommend to more people doing out there, even if you don't know too much about the audience and who's listening, and even I don't know it, but like what are three habits that you find valuable really for yourself and in your own life? Doesn't have to be workout related only.
Okay, so I'm going to try and give you some offbeat ones because, you know, I feel like most people have already heard, you know, stay consistent, you know, like sleep before 9 p.m. You know, I'm going to try to give you some ones that you haven't heard before but are also working really well for me. One, a lot of workout people, you know, drink coffee or some kind of stimulant, right? Not even just workout people, it's people in general, they drink coffee. If you do, if you rely on some kind of stimulant to keep you going, whether it's coffee, tea, or meth, I don't know. You know, it's like, I don't think you should do that, but you know, if you do, I can't stop you. I recommend cycling. Like one of the things that really worked well for me or really like impacted my life to the point where this is why people know me and one of the reasons why we're doing this is cycling my coffee. I don't drink it every day. I drink it every other day. Now you can drink it less if you want, but I think it's important to have something on, you know, to where you can feel the effects of it. And if you don't drink coffee, I'm not saying to start. I'm saying if you do, but also having some time to kind of break your addiction and not get used to it. Because as most people who have drank coffee before know, you know, first time you have, you're like, oh, this is great. I have so much energy. I'm going to clean the house. You know, I'm going to do all this stuff. And then, you know, a couple of days in, they're drinking more and more. It's like, well, now I need 2 cups to feel normal. Now I need 3 cups to feel normal. You know, when I started getting to that point where I would need a cup of coffee to wake up and feel normal, I'm like, well, what's the point of this when I felt perfectly normal without drinking coffee, right? You know, now we're in the red. No, now we're in debt. You know, it's like now I need coffee just to get to the normal point and even more to feel special. So why don't I just scale it back? To where I, you know, it's just the point to where coffee is always special for me. And the point of that, for me, it's every other day. If that happens every other day, I that works well. I still feel the creativity, which is interesting. Like in my podcast with Bioneer, he's like, that's interesting because you would think, you know, the adrenaline you get from that would reduce creativity. And I'm like, you know what? That makes sense, but I don't know why. It's like, I feel more creative and I feel more motivated after I drink light coffee. Maybe it's because I sip so lightly to where I don't, it's not to the point where I feel the adrenaline rush. I don't know, but I'm not exhausted. I don't know. I don't know. I'll get back to people on when I find out why that is. But yeah, I like that. You know, so if you drink coffee, cycle it. Number two, you know, introduce change to your life. I'll put it this way. Have a steady stream of information going to your life, because that's how we make changes, whether it's books, listening to YouTube videos. I know a lot of you right now are not even watching this. You know, Phil's putting all this in. I'm sure he's making he put all this effort to make it look nice, and we're not even watching it. You know, we're just listening to it. So, you know, but I mean, no judgment. I do that too. That's how a lot of us listen to stuff. So we listen to videos, we listen to podcasts. So books, podcasts, YouTube videos, speakers, changing up who you hang around. This is how we get positive change in our lives. You know, like I would never have started pursuing calisthenics or, you know, like doing the stuff I do now, you know, if I didn't read, you know, or if I didn't, you know, and I don't read as much as I like nowadays, but I listen to different people speak. Even if you don't think you don't have to like worship them. You don't have to think they're your idol, you know, just get that new perspective. And it helps change our mind on things. It's like, hey, you know, this guy's talking about his gardening, and he did like changes in his gardening and it changed his life. Why don't I change, you know, my photography routine? You know, I don't know why I'm making people sound stupid. It's a smart thing. You know, when you do that, I think that's how we get changed in our life. That's how we get new ideas. It's harder to get new ideas as trying to think of new ideas. When we have new stuff, it inspires us, you know, and by all means, keep it in something that's positive. It keeps you motivated and keeps you going, right? Because there's plenty of other things in the world that can bring us down, that we want to voluntarily, if we can choose it, pick, hang around people that bring us up. And third is, you know, it kind of goes hand in hand to this, but be comfortable with introducing change to your life. I know there's probably a lot of listeners to this who are probably more advanced than I am in just athletics in general, and that's fine. But, you know, a lot of them are also younger. And I spent a lot of time talking with members in our community of all athletic levels. And one of the things that I've said that I've noticed really seems to help them is to be comfortable making change in your life. But the way you go about that as you grow, you know, if you're in your teens, 20s, or some people are going through this in their 50s, there's not really an age thing, but as you want to improve as a person, you really have to figure out like the balance between pushing yourself out of your comfort zone slightly, and knowing what you were right on, knowing what, you know, like when you're learning a new skill and you're like, well, everyone's teaching it this way. And sometimes you're like, okay, turns out I was wrong. You know, I like, again, straight arm strength, perfect example. And it's like, that's one of the things that I was resistant to. It's like, oh, turns out, you know, after I do it right, you know, it's like, okay, this helped a lot. You're like, that's the change. So some of the things that you were wrong in, but where your talent and your genius and what you can do to help the world reside in, is some of the stuff that you think is right and everyone else is telling you it's wrong. Okay. It turns out after you master it and after you're into it, you're like, no, turns out actually they were wrong and I was right. And I don't mean that with any kind of ego, right? I don't mean that with any kind of ego. I mean, like, this is how we improve as a society, right? It's like one of the things we're like, we're very at the very, like through your entire life, you're like, that just doesn't seem right. And it turns out, you know, it wasn't right. I think a fitness example of this, man, there are so many, but because I use a fitness example, like for straight arm strength, another one might be spending more time on the basics, right? I think is like here's something. Spending more time on the basics for sure. But I wanted something that I had personal experience in. One of the things that, you know, it felt natural to me. Like if I've been spending a lot of time trying to work on push-ups, trying to spend a lot of time working on this to like, well, I want to take a break. I want to try, you know, I see someone doing this thing. I want to try that. And, you know, you don't want to be so scatterbrained that you never make any progress anywhere. But if you put in like 2 or 3 months of hard progress and your progress is slowing down and you want to explore something else, you know, I was always taught not to do that. But turns out when you do that and you come back, you're like, oh, okay, it actually helped. That's one of the things that felt very natural.
Nice. Yeah. We're, as I said, coming to an end of the interview. Always at the end of every interview, we have some quick questions, quick answers. And the first question is, what's your favorite food?
Depends on the day. I like beef, stew, pasta. You know, if I had to give one, I would say pasta. You know, sure. Not for health, just for preference.
Nice. Are you a dog or a cat person?
Dog person. I have both, but I prefer dogs.
Cool. And what's the animal that's hanging behind you? Is it a fox, like at the wall?
I believe that's a, let's see, if I move my head out of the frame. I think that is a wolf.
Yeah.
It came with the people who sold us the house. I just thought it was nice.
Sure. No, I saw that it's a wolf. So yeah, cool. What's your favorite exercise if you have to choose only one?
Walking. Walking is what really, walking after a full night's rest is how I really align myself and plan out my day. And I think of so many good ideas from that. and like strength and exercise. For me, that's relatively simple. There's so many exercises you can choose from, but walking is what aligns all of it. It's the central nervous system compared to muscles and stuff.
Well, do you track your steps each day? Like how?
No. Okay. I don't. Yeah. Cause I actually try not to have my phone. Sometimes I try to spend some time not being with an electronic device on me at some point. Because I feel better. Even if there's no like physiological reason for it, I feel better mentally.
Understand. And you don't count it in your head like one step, two steps. No, I'm joking.
Sometimes, you know, I'm so used to counting that I find myself counting the steps and I'm like 593. I'm like, oh, I don't, why am I doing this? I'm not writing it down. So yeah, so sometimes I do, but not regularly.
Okay. Good for you. What athletes inspire you?
Oh, I mean, this is hard to say because a lot of calisthenics athletes, I know their faces, not necessarily their names, and I don't want to mispronounce them. It's to be honest, it's a lot of the non-American ones. You know, it's like I love American athletes, but there's so many out there, you know, from like Russia, Yugoslavia, different places that are just so strong. If I had to choose one, I don't know. I don't know. Like, again, I'm not really inspired by athletes in that sense. Not because I'm not inspired by them, but I'm not inspired by a particular one. So anyone who's really making an effort to change, it's really the ones who make a big change to where they might not have had the greatest natural ability. And then they came back and they broke out in a big way. Those inspire me.
Oh, cool. Pull or push if you would have to decide?
Better at pushing, like most people are, but I prefer pulling.
Okay. Do you have a favorite book overall?
I wouldn't say I have a favorite book, but I will say, just to give maybe a little bit more of an offbeat answer, that I've recently learned a lot from the Bible. And I think even if you're not of a particular religion, it can be worthwhile to explore religious texts and at least know how people are thinking. And if you're looking at it through the lens of trying to learn, you can agree and disagree, but there are some lessons in there for all of us to learn.
Cool. I also saw that this was the first YouTube video on your channel, even though at least the one being active, like calisthenics, no, fitness versus Christianity. Is it right?
Yeah, I think as a second one, the first one was, the thumbnail doesn't even have me on it, so that I can understand how people miss it. It was about like very gentle exercises. Like I went through like wall push-ups, knee tucks, assisted squats, things like that. But it's one of the first videos that I put out, and that back then I only had like 15 minutes a day to make a video, so had to be single take. Mm-hmm. Had to be like one or two clips, so that's what was on my mind at that time.
Wow. Nice. What's your favorite music genre?
Oh man, that's hard to say. If you had asked me even 10 years ago, I would have been like rock and roll. But then eventually, you know, I explore R&B. I like R&B, soul, blues. I really like all genres, almost all genres. Almost all genres. There are some that might be not quite for me. But I spent a lot of time listening to soul. I like R&B, blues, still like some rock and roll. But I used to like 80s rock a lot more than I do now. I still like it nowadays. But yeah, like I really got more into the soul aspect of things.
Cool. Yeah. And the last question, what's your message to the calisthenics community and what's your message to the listeners in general?
Let's all get better together. That's the thing. It's I feel like we are already a niche community. Calisthenics has made major strides in the past decade or so. And in the sense of like, we're spreading into the world and we're still considered alternative, but you know, like being able to get to a spot where people understand this tremendous thing that, again, something they know but don't really know, is that we, all of us, have the ability to get healthy, fit, and strong with just our body and gravity, and maybe a pull-up bar, you know, something to hang from. You know, it's like, again, it's like debatable that there's like different things you can work around there, but our body and gravity, mostly, we can get so fit and strong from that. Yes, I mean, like, you spend money on gym membership, you know, spend money on a home gym, buy barbells, do all this stuff. But it's just like, don't forget that we have this ability. You know, we have to get strong with just our body and everything that's already around us. And we have the time we have for that, you know, and just like being able to spread that knowledge as a community and share it. Sure. We spend a lot of time arguing, you know, there's that, you know, like any kind of fitness community, there's arguing, but just being able to spread that to the world. I think I really look forward to that. I hope it gets to the point where people understand that. That's a big part of my goal in life right now, and building the hybrid calisthenics routine, which will be free, is just showing people how they can get fit and strong with their body. And yeah, explore, you know, powerlifting. Yeah, explore, you know, Olympic weightlifting if you want. But just keep in mind that you can already get very fit and strong using just your body and gravity.
True. Great. Thanks for taking the time. For the people who want to get in touch with you, where can they reach you best? Where do they find you?
I am known as Hybrid Calisthenics everywhere on the internet. You can find me on whatever social platform that you like. YouTube is probably the most prominent one. I spend a lot of time on Instagram. I spend some time on TikTok, Facebook, the platform now called Meta, but I spend time on Facebook. Just anywhere that short form videos are welcomed and distributed, and videos in general, I'm usually on, including podcast stuff, most notably on YouTube. But you know, I say this to everyone, it may not apply to as much to your following because they are, they're probably already involved in fitness. But you know, it's a dangerous thing for content creators to say that they have enough subscribers at the time, but I feel like I'm okay. I don't need to ask people to follow me. I think do that if you think you can benefit. But if it's a choice between that and if you learn anything during this podcast and making it a choice to improve yourself or help others improve, then please go do that instead.
Wow. That's super, super nice. We will put all the links in the description. So sure. We don't say you have to check out Hampton, but if you want to, you can do that if that inspires you to and gives you even more knowledge how you can continue helping other people. That's super cool. Yeah, basically that's it. Thanks again. We're coming to an end before you can end the episode, Hampton. I want to say thank you to everyone listening to this till the end. 1 hour 30, super nice interview, a lot of input, a lot of useful advice and insights into your life, into your head. I'm super grateful for that. And if you enjoyed the episode, you, the dear listener, you can give it a thumbs up. That helps a lot to spread the knowledge. And Hampton, thanks again to you. You can end the episode and have a great day.
Thank you so much, Phil. I hope everyone has a great day listening to this.